Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's go.
Let's go.
We ain't got no time to waste. Let's go.
Let's go.
You are now listening to Jason Anderson, and you are in the zone.
You're in the zone with Jason Anderson on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Davis.
There it is.
Here's Carter. 4 for 3 for the win. It is no good. Ball put back, no good. And Pittsburgh advances in the NCAA tournament.
You're in the zone on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
March Madness has begun. The Kansas City Chiefs have a new pass rusher and Aaron Rodgers. There's actually nothing new there. Sorry, everybody. Aaron Rodgers still leads First Take. Your First Take update here in the zone. Mr. Rodgers' neighborhood, it says at the top. Alan Lazard agrees to a 4-year, $44 million deal with the Jets. Problem with Aaron Rodgers having a, quote, wish list, question mark? There are a lot of other things going on around the NFL as well. The NFC East is in a news-breaking mode at the moment as the Eagles are going to be releasing cornerback Darius Slay. It sounds like Ezekiel Elliott may have played his last down as a member of the Dallas Cowboys as well. A lot of moving parts, a lot of people to talk to, and a lot of stuff to cover here today in the zone. Jason Anderson is out, so it's just me, Joshua Briscoe, and Beards McFly on the other side of the glass with you here today. Not all show long, though. We'll get you a little March Madness primer with our friend Lee Sterling. Todd Lebo, we'll catch up with him in about 40 minutes or so. And make sure your bracketology is in the space you need it to be. And as ever, you can go join the 810 WHB Bracket Challenge. Still, the first four don't count in your ability to go fill out your bracket. So it's not too late to go join the Bracket Challenge at 810WHB.com. Go and click the Bracket Challenge icon. And you can enter and compete against all of us. Compete against your own friends and family and anyone you can get to enter the challenge, 810WHB.com. That's brought to you by Twin Peaks, Robert Brogdon Buick GMC, and Olathe Kia, Smoke and Fire, and Hy-Vee. I'm going to fill out my bracket with pen today. I have not yet, but I do have most of my Final Four penned in at this point. I did pick a national champion because I was asked to by video producer extraordinaire Paige, who had to go around and wrangle all of us. Did you have to submit your final predictions yet, Beards?
No.
Okay. She might have gotten one person from each show.
What I'm doing.
No, I really don't either. But I have my underdog because it's a team with a dog mascot, and I've got my champion, not a dog mascot, but just. Made some choices that I feel pretty good about. The one pick I will reveal today with utmost confidence is that the zone is all in on Furman over Virginia because Beards and I still stand for something. I very much respect Myron Metcalf's stance yesterday that, hey, it's nice to have some variety in how you can win a game in the college basketball world. I think that's true. I think Myron's terrific. That will not slow my crusade against Virginia basketball. This is something Beards and I have been in since, I want to say day one.
A while.
But a long time. One of the greatest sports victories of my lifetime is UMBC, and I didn't know who they were before that day. So the madness continues, and of course, March Madness on Sports Radio 810 WHB is brought to you by Xfinity, Blue Chew, CBD American Shaman, First Federal Bank, JPA Roofing, and Barstool Sportsbook inside Hollywood Casino. But the biggest news locally right now, and we will hear from KU. Originally, it was going to be Bill Self, and now it seems like it's maybe more likely that we hear from Norm Roberts after a couple of players. That'll be around noon, probably 11:45 or so. We'll hear from Kansas as they get ready for their first round matchup with Howard. And then at 1 o'clock, no Mick Schaefer today. I think he might join us tomorrow at Atomic Cowboy Sports Saloon. More on that a little later on. But at 1 o'clock, my dear friend Ryan Tracy of RGR Football, Locked On Chiefs, and a whole lot more. One of my absolute favorite people in the world to talk Chiefs with. And I bet he's going to have a whole lot of thoughts on Juwan Taylor, on Charles Aminihu, on Tershawn Wharton. And I know this is going to be hard for Ryan. I texted him before this news came down. But Ryan Tracy is the number one fan of Kansas City Chiefs fullbacks that I have ever known. And late last night, right after the news broke about Charles Aminihu, who we're going to talk about predominantly here in this hour, right after that, it was announced that Chiefs fullback Michael Burton has signed with the Denver Broncos. I'm frankly worried to bring that up with Ryan just because I might need to save it till the end so if he does get choked up, it's not awkward for the rest of the interview. And I also am genuinely curious, are the Chiefs going to go get another traditional fullback? Or is this going to be a matter of, you know, letting the old ways go a little more? I don't know. I'll be very curious to see on that, and I'll ask Ryan his thoughts. But the news of the night was absolutely the Chiefs signing previously Houston Texans, most recently San Francisco 49ers defensive lineman Charles Aminihu. He signed a deal worth $16 million over 2 years, an average annual value of $8 million. Don't know the structure right now, and it could be worth up to $20 million with incentives. There's a whole lot going on here that I think makes this a fascinating signing, and then there's also some stuff that kind of takes some of the fun and excitement out of a few of these parts. We're going to try to work through all of that here at the top of the show today. So Aminihu was a fifth-round pick of the Texans in 2019. The Niners traded for him in November 2021 for a sixth-round pick in what will be this year's draft, 2023. And then he ended up playing 26 games for the Niners and really became a valuable rotational pass rushing piece. He was not a full-time starter. He's not a traditional edge setter in the run game and all, and we'll see how that evolves, because that part of that is what's going to be projectable in Aminihu's game. But as a pass rusher off the edge, and not just off the edge, by the way, more on that in a minute. Per Pro Football Focus, he finished the 2022 season with a 75.3 pass rush grade, 28th among all qualifying edge rushers and defensive ends, 16th in quarterback hurries with 39. But there is a more important stat here that I want to be the one that hopefully sticks in your head about Charles Aminihu. Sacks and hurries and pressures, and we try to figure out the best ways to formulate and understand how to evaluate pass rushers, but it's hard because pass rushing is a team sport in and of itself, right? If it's your four-man line, if you get some help on the blitz, whatever it may be, how's the defense actually playing to you? Double team rates and all of that. But win rate, win percentage, I think right now might be the best individual metric we have for a pass rusher, because it really locks in on that guy. Now, on a Niners defensive line that is full of bona fide dudes, you're probably getting a little less attention. You got to win your one-on-one matchups, but you're probably going to get some one-on-one matchups. I think that was certainly the case with Aminihu. But KP underscore show on Twitter put this out last night after the signing, quote tweeting Ian Rappaport's tweet about the deal. The tweet reads, "Edge rushers in the NFL last year who had a higher win percentage than Aminihu as a pass rusher: Myles Garrett, Nick Bosa, Micah Parsons, Za'Darius Smith, Trey Hendrickson, end of list." 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Garrett, Bosa, Parsons, Smith, Hendrickson. Those are really good football players. And Aminu, who was also in the top 15 in total pressures. He's also 25 years old, turning 26 in August. Ted Nguyen of The Athletic, who just does stupendous work covering everything. I trust his eye implicitly at this point. Says KC is good at replacing, as good at replacing talent as any team in the league. Aminu, who is an upgrade over Frank Clark. Saw someone else on Twitter mention, hey, playoff Frank Clark might be a different ball of wax. Fair enough. Sam McDowell tweeted last night. Aminu, who, these are all charting numbers per Pro Football Focus. These are not subjective grades. These are just like charting numbers on alignment and things like that. If you are a little bit hesitant on the subjective grading stuff, I get it. But this is just where he lined up per PFF via McDowell. He noted that Aminu, who played 364 snaps on the outside, 144 over the tackle, and 138 as a defensive tackle in 2022. This is a Veach Spags special. And I bet Joe Colan right now is thrilled. Because one thing we've seen the Chiefs really, they've done it at times for a while, and we know not this most recent season, but 2 years ago is when we had all the hype about Chris Jones playing more defensive end. I think the sweet spot on the Chiefs' defensive line right now is finding positional versatility. We talked about that yesterday with Juwan Taylor. The Chiefs value versatility. I think there's something to that in the current NFL marketplace. But at 6'5", 280, is what he's listed at currently on Pro Football Reference, Aminu, who has already shown an ability to move around the defensive line, and this last year, I think, is when we saw it maybe the most effectively, as a guy like Mike Dana, who I'm going to have to pull up his measurables, but he is not 6'5", 280. If he's 6'5", 280, we'll take a break right now. Just figured that would be something that would make Beards happy and me sad, so there's something to be gained. 6'2", 255. We're good. Show continues. Mike Dana, who is not the giant physical presence, was really efficient moving inside. Adam Teicher mentioned this yesterday, and I'm lockstep with him. Mike Dana has been underrated in this Chiefs, not just the pass rush or their front four, but like on the roster. He might be the most underrated player on the team, especially once you get up to kind of a national level. But they found success moving Dana inside, and obviously we have seen them move Chris Jones outside, third down, trying to get him one-on-one matchups up against a tackle and all of that. Chris Jones is obviously an outrageously superhuman talent that isn't always going to be flexible that way. But the Chiefs also brought back a player on the defensive side who we briefly mentioned yesterday, Tershawn Wharton. 1 year, $2 million. Wharton also shows the ability and has multiple times to move up and down the Chiefs defensive line. So there are two things, and there was a great thread that I tweeted out, quote tweeted last night. My Twitter handle is JB Briscoe, no E if you're new here. I ought to get the actual credit to the person who did the work that I quote tweeted so you could see. But what I, Jordan Elliott at Splash_cousin, as opposed to the Splash Bros, I imagine, Bay Area, that makes sense. It's just a big thread of little clips of some pass rush reps of Charles Minihue's that Jordan tweeted out in the thread form last night. And we already have talked and knew and had seen about the positional versatility, being able to line up in different spots on the line. But what I was really impressed with through this thread is the pass rushing versatility. The versatility in how he attacks his blocker in a variety of ways. That was something that also was a big calling card for Frank Clark when he got here. It doesn't always mean it's going to work out great. And if Aminu who can't stay healthy and the wear and tear of being a team starter, presumably, if that backfires, there's your drawback, I suppose. But seeing him go through with these swipes and rips and these other variants on different ways he can win with the long arm and what he can do with, my God, the long arm, I don't mean just like how long his arm is, but also, dude is, he has Mr. Fantastic arms. They just keep going. I don't understand it. And these are things that, Spags loves, that Joe Colan seems to love, and that the NFL generally really does value. The Niners have redoubled their efforts on the interior of their defensive line. They keep spending there. I understand why they let Aminihou walk. It's a little pricier for a guy that they got for a late draft pick and got good production out of, but it just ended up being kind of a value proposition for them. I think that makes sense. And you've got a little bit of my kind of like early excitement on Aminihou as a player, who once again, like we talked about with Juwan Taylor, the word that keeps coming around for Aminihou is ascending, his best football being ahead of him. The versatility and the ability to win in different ways is really important. If all you have is a bull rush, a tackle like Orlando Brown will stop you. I know that we're in like bleep on Orlando Brown mode, which I think is at least a little bit unfair right now. Like, I don't feel great about the whole, like, oh, the NFL thinks he's the right tackle. I don't, whatever. That's a whole other tangent maybe we have time for this week. Maybe we don't. But if all you have is a bull rush, a certain type of tackle can stop you in your tracks. If all you have is speed around the edge, you know, if you're D4 with a violent first step and great speed, well, you can see that kind of be hampered by age and injury. And also, once the book is out on you, can you win with a counterpunch of some sort? And admittedly, limited reviews of like highlight clips, but there were a lot of them in this thread that are really exciting. You see different attack plans and move combinations even from Aminihou, who clearly was well coached in San Francisco and should be well coached by Joe Colan and Steve Spagnuolo here in Kansas City as well. I think the fit makes a ton of sense. Here's my favorite part about it, though. That's him as a player. I want to talk about it from team building at this level for where the Chiefs stand now. I mentioned Mike Dana. And George Karlaftis, first-round pick last year, started every game, played well. I don't want to over or underrate what Karlaftis did, because we were talking about this right after the draft, and by the time training camp came around, I said I think I would bet on George Karlaftis leading the Chiefs' defensive ends in snaps, and he did that. Partially because Frank Clark, you know, sickness and suspension and all of that, but like, that's how it was going to pan out, it seemed like, and it was. Karlaftis was out there playing good football all the time. That is a very difficult thing for a rookie to do. So I don't want to underrate what Karlaftis did, because I really do value that. But also, he wasn't like a game wrecker, world beater, and would have been outrageous for him to do that in his rookie season anyway. He's relatively raw. He came into this league as a water poloist. Is that the proper term? As a former water polo player who played at Purdue, and you got the high motor and all of that, but there's still room for him as a technician, even if he doesn't get a lot more bendy, all of that. I am very happy that the Chiefs have George Karlaftis on this team right now. But, all of that to say, I think if Karlaftis is your second best defensive end, and you have Chris Jones, your defensive line is a problem. In a good way for you, in a bad way for your opponent. Breaking news, Beards, what is it?
From Tom Pelissero, Colin Saunders is to the Saints.
Wow, okay. He was tweeting yesterday like a guy who knew that he might be moving on, and there you have it. Tom Pelissero, full tweet here. A literally big addition for the Saints. Defensive tackle Colin Saunders is expected to sign with New Orleans, sources tell me, and at Rap Sheet. Saunders is coming off his best season with the Chiefs. Super Bowl champion Chiefs recording 3.5 sacks. Let me know, Beards, if you see contract details pop up, just because he's been a lovely personality around this team, and I'm happy for all these guys, Andrew Wiley, Colin Saunders, that type of player who wasn't necessarily always on a superstar trajectory. I like to see them get paid. So let me know if you see those numbers. I'll be curious. But it's also kind of a bummer. He was a really nice piece here in Kansas City, and I imagine from everything I've ever seen, a treat in the locker room. With that being said, here real quick. The roster construction thing for adding Aminihou, and we can get into more of the details after the break. The Chiefs don't have a massive, unavoidable, must-attack-it void on the roster right now. They've got a lot of places they can and should upgrade. They've got a lot of places where it's not as good as it was right, you know, a month ago. And that's okay. I mean, the wide receiver, I guess, is still a void, and I'm expecting Juju back at this point. We'll see how that evolves. But if they start Charles Omenihu and George Karlaftis at defensive end next year with Mike Dana as their third defensive end, I will say that is an okay 1-2-3 at edge. I would much rather, and if they're there at 31 and they've got a great defensive end prospect that they really like that's fallen, or frankly, if they just see a Trent McDuffie equivalent at edge falling and they go up and get him, it's not always my favorite move, but I'd be interested. I want to hear about it. All of a sudden, Omenihu and Karlaftis and this rookie are your three rotational guys, and Mike Dana would certainly still get a ton of run. That 1-2-3-4 would be fantastic. The same goes at tackle. Adam Teicher sounded pretty bullish on Lucas Niang yesterday. If you're starting Juwan Taylor and Lucas Niang, I think the offense will continue functioning. Like, I'm really happy that Andrew Riley got paid, but remember where Andrew Riley started. I think he said he was on his fourth practice squad before the Chiefs brought him up. They'll be okay there. They're going to add some actual professional pass catcher at receiver, no question. But right now, there is not the, well, they got to draft that position at 31. Because it looked like it was going to be tackle, and it looked like it was going to be edge. And now I think they have an upgrade on at least regular season Frank Clark these last couple of years in Omenihu. Helping to build that foundation where if it's those guys, again, built around Chris Jones in the middle, if he's not there, this whole thing changes. But building around Chris Jones, with Karlaftis and Omenihu on the edges, it allows you to take your shots where you want to take them, not where you have to take them. If it's at 31, if it's in the second round, if it's spending on another free agent, and this is not an outrageous deal, it's not an outrageously long deal, and it's a younger player. All of that together all makes a ton of sense to me. I think this signing is very on brand for Brett Veach, for Steve Spagnuolo, for where the Chiefs stand right now, and the team is better now than they were 12 hours ago. Well, actually, it was probably about 12 hours ago when the signing came through. So I'm a fan for those reasons. There's some other stuff, some complicating factors that we'll talk about on the other side of the break. But the news just now, as Beards mentions, Colin Saunders on his way to the Saints. We'll talk more about that, more about Omenihu, and also get you ready for March Madness coming up here in the Zone.
Did you know that Greenlight Dispensary was voted the number one dispensary in Missouri and the number one loyalty program in Missouri? It doesn't surprise me one bit. If you're looking for the best cannabis experience in Kansas City, go to Greenlight Dispensary and visit them online at greenlightdispensary.com.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
It's my favorite old movie, Blown Out with the Wind. Rosebud.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Colin Saunders' deal from Tom Pelissero, reportedly a 3-year deal worth up to $14.5 million with the Saints. Up to could mean incentives, don't know what the guarantees are, but he's going to New Orleans with what I imagine is a pretty nice big chunk of money. Excited there for Colin Saunders. The Chiefs will miss him, but also, we mentioned this yesterday, totally understand why the Chiefs said, hey, we're going to go 1 year, $2 million for Tershawn Wharton instead of trying to pay whatever that premium might be for Saunders. But man, everybody, just the outpouring of people being stoked for Colin Saunders here is pretty cool and very well deserved. So glad to see some of those like lower mid-level free agents, not the guys that are leading every conversation on ESPN right now, the Andrew Wiley and Colin Saunders signings. I'm excited for them and hope that they're able to make a big impact in their new landing spots. Obviously Wiley in Washington and now Colin Saunders on the way to New Orleans. Not quite there for Mike Burton in Denver. Could have gone somewhere else. It'd have to be Denver, Mike. We'll talk more about that with Ryan Tracy at 1. One element of the Charles Omenihu signing that I feel compelled to at least mention here, because it's a very recent and now up in the air unpleasant part of his story. Charles Omenihu, who the Chiefs reportedly agreed to terms with last night, 2 years, $16 million, up to 20 with incentives. He was arrested due to a misdemeanor domestic violence allegation on January 23rd. Obviously, the Niners were still in the playoff hunt at that point. I'm just going to read you a couple of paragraphs from ABC 7 News in San Francisco Bay Area, what they reported shortly after the arrest. The details from ABC 7 in San Francisco said, Officials say a woman called to report that her boyfriend, a Minahu, pushed her to the ground during an argument. She complained about pain to her arm, police say, but there were no visible injuries and she declined medical treatment at the time of the investigation. Officers contacted a Minahu at the scene. He gave a statement and was cooperative with officers. He was then arrested for misdemeanor domestic violence and he was served with a restraining order by investigating officers. It was not deemed a felony arrest. I am fundamentally uncomfortable with the idea of like, well, let's try to figure out what happened there, because I don't think that's very helpful. And we've gone from kind of trying to assess what happened with Frank Clark in college to Frank Clark in the offseason to Willie Gay last year. And Nate Taylor in The Athletic did note that that could be a personal conduct policy violation that ends up causing a suspension for Aminahu, where he could be suspended as a member of the Chiefs for this thing in January. I don't love tonally where some of the Willie Gay conversations ended up. People got kind of flippant with it, which I think is wildly inappropriate. And also, you may have heard in the details there from the ABC station in San Francisco and had a thought that might have been honestly similar to what my first thought was, which is, well, it's not the worst thing I've ever read from an NFL domestic violence arrest. And that knee-jerk reaction at the time and still now talking about it on the radio makes me deeply uncomfortable that there even is like a inherent scale to that. The one point on like the seriousness level that I would like to point out, if you go, oh, he's a shove, what are you talking? This is literally a man whose job is to shove 300-pound men. I imagine it being shoved by Charles Aminahu in any sort of confrontation, to whatever degree of seriousness, would be a very serious action. And beyond that, I don't want to try to like dodge that part of the conversation, but I also don't know that we have enough information for me to have any further opinion or further details to try to offer you at this point. Also here from the same story from ABC7 in San Francisco, there was a I was going to get the little blurb here as to how it was deemed this way. Here's just a quote from the San Jose police sergeant. There's many different factors. Some of them include what the relationship is. Do they live together? Do they have children together? What classified this as a misdemeanor and not a felony was that there was not any visible injury. There were mere complaints of pain. Those are the details we have at this point. Right now, as far as I have understood, there is an ongoing investigation into all of that. And again, he could end up being suspended for that by the NFL, potentially before he ever, you know, suits up as a Chief. So eventually, I imagine the Chiefs will be asked about it. And I'm also pretty sure they'll say they did their due diligence, which is not always all that deep of a deep dive.
Cough, Browns, cough.
Right. Yes, thank you. But I don't even specifically just mean for the Chiefs, although they remember the week they signed Damon Arnett and then cut Damon Arnett?
Yeah. Yeah, do I ever.
Yeah. It is a fragile, difficult thing with degrees that all lead me to further discomfort and uncertainty. I just wanted to at least give you the details that we have at this point. Share some of the discomfort about it, and then we'll probably circle back around if more information comes out and if there is suspension news at any point. But in the meantime, that is a part of his story in San Francisco. As part of the, I mean, this year, this was less than 2 months ago. So it's clearly a part of who he is right now and how he gets from San Francisco to Kansas City and all of that intertwined. So there's the info that we have at the moment. Want to include that in the package of the Chiefs signing of Charles Aminahu. It all goes side by side in all the places that I'm excited about him as a player. I also got to this point in the notes and research and everything, and it just kind of took some air out of the sails. So We'll see what comes from it further. I don't believe he has had any public statements since then. Maybe he'll have more information to share as well. But that's a part of the story, and he is the newest member of the Chiefs defensive line. We're going to take a big shift both in content and in tone on the other side of this break because we're getting back into the March Madness. Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports joins Todd Lebo for a little March Madness bracket primer. If you haven't filled your bracket out yet, don't do it until you hear from Lee Sterling. And if you've not just found out the bracket, maybe you want to play some wagers. Lee's got you covered there as well. Todd Lebo with Lee Sterling on the March Madness bracket preview coming up next.
Did you know that Greenlight Dispensary was voted the number one dispensary in Missouri and the number one loyalty program in Missouri? It doesn't surprise me one bit. If you're looking for the best cannabis experience in Kansas City, go to Greenlight Dispensary and visit them online at greenlightdispensary.com.
Who's going to win and by how much? You're about to find out from National Sports Handicapping Champion Lee Sterling on The Zone. Log on to ParamountSports.com or call toll-free 800-400-9741 to get started.
It is that time of year to talk about March Madness with our good friend Lee Sterling from Paramount Sports. Lee, we had a great, great football season, and now basketball, the madness is here, right? It is time to go. This is a wonderful time of year for you, isn't it?
The best. I love football. Football is my favorite sport. But the next 4 days, I think it's the greatest 4 days in all of sports. I mean, nothing compares to it. And I also get to find out what channel True TV is on.
every year, you got to listen, watch it for like 4 days. That's what we get.
Right.
That's what we get. We go do it, though. Hey, let's get into these brackets because there's a lot to digest here. Let's start out west where the Kansas Jayhawks got shipped out to. They're not happy that they didn't get to be in the Midwest. We're not happy in Kansas City because we have a regional here. We're not going to get a local team here unless
right. We'll
call Iowa State local if they make it down. Let's start out west. What do you like about this bracket? Is Kansas in a good spot here in the one seed, or would they have been better off being closer to home?
Good spot. Great spot. So, number two, UCLA, two key injuries. Yeah, they deserved it too, but the problem is probably as far as they can go is probably what maybe most 6, 7, or 8 seeds. Then you got a 3 seed in Gonzaga that historically you can't go very far. And then probably the toughest competition is going to come out of UConn, and they face them in the Sweet 16. That's going to be a battle, but like number 5, St. Mary's, they've done nothing. Number 6, TCU, I thought they should have been a 9 or a 10. And then 8-9, Arkansas and Illinois. I don't think anyone even cares about that game. Neither one of those two teams is going to do anything. So I think that they're in a great spot. So if they're going to repeat, this is certainly the region to be in. You want maybe an underrated team in the first round. Let's look at North Carolina State. They're getting 5.5 points in that game. Creighton can go through periods where they just can't score. We're talking about 6, 7, 8 minutes. So just think that NC State's one of these teams that it's feast or famine. If they look good, they'll score 90, 95 points on you. They can rain down threes. If they look bad, you won't even be in the game. So I think they've got nothing to lose, and Creighton might be tight here.
So overrated out there, I think you've already kind of said it there. UCLA or Gonzaga, or is it a fight on who's the most overrated in the West?
There's like 5 teams that are overrated, Todd. I do the overrated, underrated team as soon as I see the seeds, and this is, I think, the easiest bracket. So sets up great for Kansas, but they will play if they, march on, they're going to face the toughest 4. That's about it. A really tough 4, but the rest of that, maybe one of the most interesting games might be the play-in game between Arizona State and Nevada. Two teams that I think could maybe win a round or two.
Yeah. All right, let's go move to the south where Missouri is. I think Alabama, they're the overall number one. They've got things really working right now. I still can't get out of my head that they somehow lost by 25 points to Oklahoma, who is not good. But whatever. They have beaten everybody else in front of them. Can they be like the Alabama of football and basketball? It just seems so weird to see them up there. Missouri's a 7 seed, but they're an underdog. This is an interesting bracket.
It is an interesting bracket here. This, you might end up seeing a lot of chalk here, believe it or not. So Utah State, a lot of people are going to play Missouri here because they're going to say, oh, power conference team. They played really well down the stretch, and why are they the underdog, wrong team favored? Well, I think it's about matchups, and they need turnovers. They need takeaways, and if they get turnovers, they've got a chance, but Utah State protects the ball, and they shoot well. They have two really good three-point shooting guards. So I think it's a bad matchup for the Tigers here. Enjoy the season. No one expected much out of them, but they're begging you to take the Tigers here, and I think if you do, you're falling for the trap here. So that's the way I view that game. And you want to here's a crazy stat here, and one of the teams in this region falls in this. Teams that are not in major conferences, and you discount also take out Gonzaga, 30-win teams, 10-2 records, not against the spread, straight up the last 10 years, and Charleston falls into this category, 31-3, a 12 seed. We talk about the 12s all the time against an overrated number 5, San Diego State, that usually doesn't do much. So they have a senior guard in Dalton Bolton, 6'10", sophomore center, Ante Brezvic from Croatia, good inside-outside tandem here. Underrated sleeper team is Charleston. Overrated team is, I'm going to say, San Diego State. But it should be fun. I think we're looking at chalk. This might be the region where we see a 1-2 final to get to the Final Four.
And Alabama probably making it through. I mean, if they play like they're supposed to. Yeah.
Okay. I think so. And another 8-9 that doesn't mean much. You know, these 8-9s, you know, I talked about Arkansas and Illinois, Maryland and Virginia. West Virginia, I think they could have done a better job. You know, no one wants to see teams that finish 7th, 8th, 9th in their conference matched up against each other. People wanted to see, you know, the Liberties. They want to see the Ionos matched up against these teams.
Yeah, they have a bunch of power conference 8-9s in this. With the exception of the next one, the East, that's where you have Florida Atlantic and Memphis. Now, Memphis looks like a scary 8 to me. Maybe I'm just recency biased because they beat Houston in their final, but they have a lot of good players there. K-State is in the East. They're playing Montana State. They're a heavy favorite. They should win this game. What are your thoughts about this East bracket right now with Purdue as that one seed?
So I like Kansas State a lot in the first game. I think they'll breeze to an easy win. Then they got to play Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And in Greensboro, I think they're going to be the only fans that really travel big time. So I think it's a disadvantage. It's going to seem like an away game for them. So Kentucky, you know, they should breeze in that 6-11 game against Providence, and could be a real tough second-round game. They're going to have to play really well. But I do like Purdue some, but I also like Duke a lot. Duke probably playing the best basketball maybe of anyone in the country, and there are 5 right now. I like Florida Atlantic here over Memphis. So Memphis played really well down the stretch. They won a key game, but you know, Houston sat a couple guys there, and they might have expended just maybe everything, and they're going to play a team with a totally different style of offense and defense than they played. So that's going to be a tough, tough matchup for them. And so another maybe team that you want to look out for here, and no one's looking at, is Vermont in the first round. And listen to this. So there is another situation that works out really well. So teams, get this, teams that ended up playing, and we're talking about anything they had, what they had to do was they had to win games to get in, tough matchups for them. So I'm looking at Vermont here. They had to battle, and people think that, you know, they're not going to do anything. Usually they play tight games. I think they're going to slow down the game against Marquette. You want a game that a 15-2, not going to win the game, but covers the spread. Let's go with Vermont against Marquette.
Yeah,
team to win that bracket, I'm going to take Duke at number 5. I think it's a wide-open year. You know, I definitely, like I said, I think it's, we're going to see a 1 or a 4 in the Kansas-UConn region. I think we'll see either Alabama or Arizona, but this could be the region where Duke breaks through.
Yeah, Marquette's a kind of a lightning rod of a two seed. I think they snuck up on a lot of people. I know I didn't pay a lot of attention to Marquette, and they're a two seed, and they could be someone who doesn't make it through very far. We'll see. All right, now we don't have a local team in our local region, which is the Midwest, but as I said, we could have this dream scenario somehow where Iowa, Drake, and Iowa State make it to Kansas City, but it's probably not going to happen. Houston gets this one seed here because it's the closest place to them. So they're the one in the Midwest. Texas could have been a one seed the way they played down the stretch. This is the old Texas regional, I guess, and Texas A&M is in there as well. What do you like or dislike about the Midwest?
Wow. I mean, I think the committee just doesn't like Texas A&M. Last year they don't make it. Thought they should have been. I thought they should have been, you know, for the SEC finishing second.
They got a seven seed, yeah.
I mean, a four or five seed at the worst. They give them a seven. They got to face maybe one of the hottest teams under the radar is Penn State. They were red hot the last couple weeks in the first round. And if they win, they got to face Texas in the second round, their arch rival. So that is a really tough part of the bracket there. But I like Texas to end up coming out of this bracket here. I just think that they're more balanced than any other team. And here's another situation. Dogs of 6.5 points or more versus non-conference opponents of three straight double-digit wins, 17-2 against the spread since 2010. And two teams that fall into that are Iona and also Colgate in the first round. They're not going to win, but Colgate against Texas. So you're looking for some situational historical plays that usually turn out really well. Iona and Colgate. Overrated Miami because the injury to Omer.
I was going to ask you about Miami. You're telling me they're overrated? Come on now.
Yeah,
that's your team.
Here's the problem. If Omer doesn't play, they're in trouble.
Right.
I think they'll beat Drake because Drake's an outside shooting team and Miami has tons of guards. Omer's the only guy that's 6'7" that can rebound or contest shots inside. If he comes back and he's 80-85%, we won't know until the first game. I'm laying off that game. And he looks good. Miami could be a sleeper, but, you know, without him, they are in big, big trouble. In another game, no one cares about Iowa and Auburn.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so any best bets? What's your favorite things that you like this first couple of days here?
Yeah, so a couple plays that I like here against the spread. I like Virginia Commonwealth, 12 seed. I think that they're going to be in a great spot here to upset St. Mary's. They use a full-court press. Mike Rhodes, team number 25 in scoring defense. They only allow 63 points per game. So getting 4.5 points, I think this is a game. St. Mary's slows down the pace. Great situational play to take an underdog here in the first round. Louisiana, the Raging Cajuns, 13 seed here, 26-7, getting 10.5 points against Tennessee. Nevada transfer Jordan Brown leads them, scores almost 20 points per game. So you're looking for a couple first-round games. Look at Virginia Commonwealth and the Raging Cajuns. Anyone wants to come on board? What a season we've had. So listen to this special. We won in every sport. You want to get our March Madness plays, and it starts in the NIT and the play-in games tonight. We'll probably have 5-6 games or more every day through the weekend. Not $397, what it was last year, even $297, $197. And we text you the plays. You're going to get the plays before about 2 o'clock Eastern time, weekends, by 11:30 Eastern, 10:30 in the morning, or when there's tournament games Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We're going to give you the star rating from 10 to 50 units. So you're going to get probably 30, 35 plays from now through the weekend. And we're going to give you our best bet each day in the NBA, hockey, UFC, where we've hit a 50 and 100 unit best bet each of the last 2 weeks. And we might have another 100 unit play. And XFL, where we're 7-2 and we've won all 4 weeks. So these plays are texted out. $197. All you need to do is go to ParamountSports.com right now or call 800-400-9741.
That sounds great. That's Lee Sterling from Paramount Sports. Good luck this March, Lee.
Okay. Thanks so much, Todd.